Welcome to my home.
Dracula, the OG vampire, and just in time for Halloween. So, Vlad the Impaler, of course, the big scary. He ruled over Wallachia, which is like present-day Romania, back in the 15th century. Now, this guy had a bit of a reputation for being one serious, hardcore ruler. Vlad was all about that impalement life. He would stick his enemies on sharp, long stakes and leave them there to suffer. It was like a twisted version of lawn decoration. But here's the thing. Vlad wasn't just a sadistic maniac. He had a reason for the madness. You see, he was constantly at odds with the Ottoman Empire, and he was all about defending his land. So he thought, hey, if I impale a bunch of enemies and display them, it'll scare the living daylights out of anyone who tries to mess with me. And you know what? It actually worked. People were terrified of him. Obviously to a point where it led to some absolutely insane rumors and eventually him turning into Dracula. Now, here's where things get even more interesting. Bram Stoker, the author of the famous novel Dracula, got wind of Vlad's story and thought, wow, this guy is a real-life vampire king. So he borrowed some elements from Vlad's legend, mixed it with a whole bunch of folklore and imagination, and boom, Count Dracula was born. But I'm getting a bit ahead of myself. So who is Vlad the Impaler, really? Who is the real vampire king? Well, that's what we're going to take a look at on today's episode of Dark Dives.
Dying is cruelty against the unsuspecting. But death is not everything. It's more cruel not to be able to die.
It's difficult for me to express precisely, but there seemed to be a doom over the ship from the moment we left.
It's nothing serious, just a small cut from that paperclip.
Willingly leave some of the happiness you bring.
Count Dracula,
I am Dra.
And if you love these episodes, want more of these episodes, ad-free versions, want them out early, make sure to check out the Patreon, patreon.com/Illuminati.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. I am Count Vladislaus Dragula.
Now, I'm not going to be spending the entirety of this episode giving you a history lesson all about Vlad and childhood all the way through adulthood and all the wars and blah, 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 blah. That would take forever. That would be its own separate episode. But we are going to talk about little things here and there. So let's jump right in and talk about Vlad's life and break down as much of it as we can. Was this monster born or made? When Vlad III, later to be known as Vlad the Impaler, was only 11 years old, he and his 7-year-old brother, Radu, were taken to Turkey as prisoners to ensure their father didn't attack the Turks. Allegedly, the Sultan there liked Radu better, which may have caused a bit of a sibling rivalry between the pair. But more than that, Vlad had absolutely no love for Turkey. It was a means to an end, and for several years he stayed there, Vlad had learned everything he could about the Ottoman Empire and the Turks' methods of warfare. Now, I'm not about to say that this is what caused Vlad's short fuse and temperament for torture, but it most certainly didn't help. I mean, if you were used as a token of war to keep your father in check and imprisoned for 6 years during some of the most important, developmentally significant times of your life, then you might be just a little bit messed up too. Come the year 1448, once Vlad was finally released and he started to rule Wallachia with the Ottomans' help. His father and his older brother had been killed the year previously, in rather brutal ways too. His father, Vlad II Dracul, and Vlad III, or Dracula, meaning son of Dracul, and he had been assassinated alongside his eldest, Mireka. It's important to note here that Wallachia, which, again, present-day Romania, was kind of stuck between Ottoman Empire and Hungary. In all the videos I've watched, articles I've read, there's no shortage of times when this area was effectively stuck in the middle between these two battling countries. Vlad II's death was on Hungary's orders. Vlad and his brother were kept in the Ottoman Empire to ensure that they remained loyal to them. I think you kind of get the picture here. Vlad's life was surrounded by an all-out war, really. And although our Vladdy Daddy did leave the Ottoman Empire as a pissed-off fatherless teenager ready to rule, it only lasted a couple months. He wasn't the monster we know him as today, not yet at least. And so after just a short while, a Hungarian took the Wallachian throne. His brother was still hanging out and in the good graces of the Ottoman Sultan, but Vlad wanted his throne back. So instead of crawling back to the Sultan with his tail between his legs, he decided to ally himself with the winning team. And the winning team was a Hungarian regent, John Hunyadi, which is the guy that ordered his father's assassination. Just so we're all on the same page, Vlad was born in a tiny country between Hungary and the Ottoman Empire. Wallachia constantly had to prove itself and effectively pick sides. The Ottomans held him and his brother hostage to ensure Vladdy Daddy was loyal, and once he and his eldest died, they released the remaining sons.
Very impressed, friend Helsing. You speak the ancient Moldavian.
Valdadalinka. Vlad took the throne, lost it, and then went to the Hungarians to prove himself to get it back. I've simplified it as best as I can. I'm sure there's some historians that are going to just ream me for this oversimplification, but I hope it makes general sense as to what kind of happened. For me anyway, this does clarify the whole nature or nurture question that people have when it comes to brutal killers. I'm not saying Vlad wasn't a horrible person, but this certainly explains why Vlad ended up on an impaling spree in later years. After all, when Vlad did have the throne for the first time, there's not much said about his brutality. It was effectively taken right from under him before he even had the chance to enjoy it or understand what a massive responsibility it was. Plus, he'd only just been released from the Ottoman Empire, and his father and brother were killed in order for that to happen. He had a lot going on. It is also worth mentioning that Vlad wasn't necessarily seen as this vampire-like beastie boy when he was alive. He might have been seen as inhuman and horrific, like, now, but during his rule, he was actually seen as one of the most respected rulers of Wallachia. To this day, Rolandia.eu explains that Romanians view him as a national hero, and during his reign, he was a true defender of Christianity and a brilliant politician. Yes, he was cruel and seemed to revel in that cruelty, and again, not justifying that. But he also wasn't aimlessly cruel and bloodthirsty without reason. For example, many of the people that Vlad the Impaler, well, impaled, were boyars, another word for nobles. And it was boyars that had assassinated his father and brother. Rumor has it that his brother was even buried alive at that time. Plus, he absolutely loathed the relationship between his younger brother and the Ottoman Sultan, which isn't hard to understand given how they had been literally kept as hostages to secure their father's loyalty. Again, that doesn't mean Vlad's boundless viciousness is a great character trait, but we can start to kind of understand his mindset. So then, when Vlad finally got the chance to take the throne back and become the ruler again, you better believe he wasn't fucking around the second time. His campaign to fill his father's shoes went overboard, and soon, Vlad the Monster, or better said, Vlad the Impaler, came into existence.
How can we get at them?
You are loaded for action!
How old are you? Little girl?
You don't know, but boys do it, little girl.
And this is where things get gross, like actually disgusting and gory. So feel free to stop listening here if you're not in the mood for it. That's just your heads up, but continuing on. Once Vlad started ruling around 1456, the years and timeline on this are slightly different from source to source, but around 1456, he became especially cruel. He ordered people to be skinned, boiled, decapitated, blinded, strangled, hanged, burned, roasted, hackled, nailed, burned alive, or stabbed. And he apparently enjoyed cutting off a victim's nose, ears, genitals, or tongue, too. Quote, "These methods were clearly used to impress, to gain the respect of both his people and his enemy, and no doubt, they were unusual for that time. But Vlad was also paranoid and revengeful." See, Vlad truly needed to be intimidating because the Ottoman Empire was in a position to invade all of Europe at that time, since Constantinople had fallen a few years earlier. So to solidify his position, he ordered that 500 boyars, though that number may have been an exaggeration, be impaled, accusing them of having shameless disunity, stating that this was the reason for the frequent changing of princes in Wallachia. And you might think, hey, at least it was a fast way to go. They were run through with a sword and that was that. But that's not the case. Vlad ensured that these people died slowly and painfully. The stake was rounded at the end, not sharpened, and that was to help avoid a quick death. And while some people were skewered from front to back, others were impaled vertically through a bodily orifice. At one point, Vlad had an entire Field of Stakes, or Forest of the Impaled, covering a 3-mile-long, 1-mile-wide area around him that was meant to deter his enemies. And again, this may be exaggerated, but holy hell, that is scary even if a small piece of it is real. Oh, and if you pissed him off enough, Vlad might just have you impaled upside down. And this is probably what Vlad is actually most well known for, but there are so many more legends about his cruelty too. It is said that in 1459, Vlad attacked the Transylvanian town of Brasov and had a table set up when his victims were impaled. He sat at the table amidst their dying cries and ate his lunch. He just casually sat there enjoying himself, apparently. Legend has it that he dipped his bread in the blood of the dying, but again, that could be exaggerated. And we'll get into more in just a little bit as to why that might be exaggerated, but in the meantime, Vlad was having the time of his life. Yet another story states that Vlad had a giant copper cauldron in his castle with a wooden cover on it. On the cover was a hole just big enough for a man's head to fit through. And once the water boiled in the pot, a prisoner would be made to put their head inside and be boiled alive. Supposedly, once boiled or roasted alive, Vlad would have the survivors eat the fresh meat of their fellows. Some stories say he would force-feed children to their mothers, then cut the woman's breasts off and force-feed it to their husbands. I hope you're not eating right now, because, again, if even just a small smidgen of that is true, it's pretty brutal. It is graphic. It is a lot. I'm not sure how many of these things are true, but again, even if a fraction of them are, then yeah, it's clear Vlad was creative in his methods. But it wasn't just Vlad that was seen as a force to be reckoned with. His men were too. See, Vlad was very pissed at the Ottoman Empire and the Sultan who literally held him hostage. Therefore, he refused to pay tribute to the Sultan, which was a massive insult. The Ottoman Empire saw it as a prince raised by them turning rebellious, as if Vlad was some teenager saying, "You don't understand me," to their parent. The Sultan, therefore, sent some of his men to assassinate Vlad, but Vlad found out who they were and impaled them and their armies. Then, in one famous battle, the Sultan's army of 250,000 men was defeated by Vlad's army of only 30,000, which included young boys. According to Rolandia.eu, quote, "Vlad harassed the Ottomans with many unexpected night attacks and constantly destroyed their possible food sources and poisoned the water wells, thus leading to a demoralized Ottoman army. On the night of June 16th, Vlad the Impaler, together with a handful of men, organized a night attack on the Ottoman army. They entered the enemy camp disguised as Turks and attempted to capture or assassinate the Sultan. Even though they did not succeed, the Turks started killing each other because of the confusion created by the disguise of Vlad's force." So, Vlad absolutely fucked with the Ottomans' heads. That's very clear. And when they marched towards him, this is where they were met with that forest of impaled people. So, he made it very clear, you do not want to mess with me. The Ottomans labeled him as evil when, honestly, it seemed like Vlad was a monster of their own creation if you kind of think about it. But with this many people against Vlad, it was seeming it was only going to be a matter of time until he did eventually fall.
Bobby, I'll die. I'm bleeding to death. Would you stop it, please?
The Sultan basically told Vlad's brother Radu, okay, you go handle this now, wanting him to fight for the throne of Wallachia instead. And honestly, Radu didn't do a horrible job of it. He did manage to gain support of noblemen, and whereas Vlad eventually became known as Vlad the Impaler, a horrific, terrifying figure, Radu was known as Radu the Handsome. Some say that he may have been the lover of the Sultan, which is a little bit messed up when you think about how he was a hostage of the Ottoman Empire at only 7 years old. But anyway, the Ottoman Empire was quite ruthless in their determination to stop Vlad, so eventually they ran him out of town, so to speak. Vlad looked for assistance from Matthias I of Hungary, but Matthias had him imprisoned instead. But why? Vlad had been allied with Hungary for some time, and he had proven to be a brutal, powerful ally, so why imprison him? Apparently, this was thanks to those damn Wallachian nobles again. They started spreading false rumors to depose him and sent a letter to Matthias, convincing him that Vlad wanted to be allied with the Sultan again. And those darn pesky nobles. They were the ones who killed Vlad's father, and now they were spreading lies and gossip and rumors about Vlad years later. this fake letter didn't just put a wrench into things either. Vlad was imprisoned for over a decade because of it. He was seen as a despot, or a ruler who holds absolute power and exercises it in a cruel, oppressive way. And don't get me wrong, Vlad was cruel to those who crossed him, but calling him a despot was meant as a massive insult, saying that Vlad would do anything to grab power when this technically was not true. The betrayal people thought he committed never actually happened, but add that into the forest of dead impaled people, and it's not really hard to see why citizens had a less than favorable view of Vladdy Daddy. During this time, quote, he became the subject of several paintings where he is portrayed as either Pontius Pilate or Aegeus, the Roman proconsul of Patras, present at the crucifixion of St. Andrew. He is also the subject of a poem written by Michael Beams, entitled Story of a Despot Called Dracula. At this point, Vlad's reputation was pretty severely damaged, and you might just say, oh, well, maybe he deserved it for all the torture of the people, you know, what he did to them, and it's justified. Or you might say that he was doing what anyone in his position would have done. He had a small army and had to use unusual tactics to frighten his enemies, which also would have been true of that time. Regardless, impalement is wrong. After years of imprisonment, Vlad was ready to reclaim his throne. And for a brief moment, he did. Victory was sweet, but short-lived. Because later that same year, as he marched to yet another battle with the Ottomans, he was ambushed and killed, dismembered, and his head allegedly sent to the Sultan. His brother Radu did take the throne, but that supposedly didn't last long either, as he was deposed multiple times before his death around 1476. But while Radu is said to be a footnote in history and borderline forgotten, it's Vlad's legend who lives on and has grown over the years. But what exactly made him Dracula?
Welcome to my home. Enter freely of your own will and leave some of the happiness you bring.
Count Dracula?
I am Dracula. And I bid you welcome, Mr. Harker, to my house. Come.
So, fun fact, the scholar who linked Vlad the Person to Dracula the Myth also had the name Radu. Little wild, right? I kind of like that. Interesting fun fact. But anyway, let's get into how this monster was made. So, since scholars have different opinions about how this came to be, please go ahead and take these theories with a grain of salt. There are quite a few possibilities, but we're just going to discuss a few of them today. Now, as many of you know, I'm sure, it was Bram Stoker who wrote the book Dracula that has inspired countless other writers and creators across the globe. A few scholars speculate that his conversations with historian Hermann Bamberger provided him with information on Vlad's violent nature, but we don't know that for sure. But what is clear is that Stoker was, without a doubt, inspired by Vlad the Impaler. Back in 1890, he even borrowed a specific rare book from the subscription library in Whitby, England, known as The Accounts and Principalities of Wallachia and Moldavia by William Wilkinson. In his book Dracula, Bram also writes of a large black dog which he borrowed from an account at the Whitby Harbor. There, members of the Royal Guard told Stoker about the ship the Dimitri, which had run aground a few years earlier, much of the crew dying on the voyage. Rescue workers reported seeing a large black dog, like the Yorkshire myth of the Barghest, escape from the hull of the ship and run into the graveyard of St. Mary's Church. The graveyard, the dog, Dracula himself, all of these are featured in Stoker's book. And according to Time magazine, Stoker himself never meant them to be seen as a work of fiction, but a real-life warning of events that had taken place in his era. A childhood nightmare all too real, as the article puts it. Yet his editor said it couldn't be published, not at the time. After all, if 1890 England sounds a bit familiar to you, then you might recall the Whitehill Chapel murders committed by Jack the Ripper happened around this time, and London was still in a panic. Therefore, Stoker's editor said that it needed to be published as a work of fiction or not at all. Quote, when the novel was finally released on May 26, 1897, the first 101 pages had been cut. Numerous alterations had been made to the text, and the epilogue had been shortened, changing Dracula's ultimate fate as well as that of his castle. Tens of thousands of words had vanished. Bram's message, once concise and clear, had blurred between the remaining lines. You can actually find the original Dracula in bits and pieces here and there, like in Macht Mirkana and The Power of Darkness or Dracula's Guest, excerpted from the original text, of course. But ultimately, this is how Dracula was born as a horrific, terrible vampire. Not only that, but the legends of what he'd done may have been exaggerated into tales even more sadistic than they were by the Ottomans who resented him. Now, this does, in my opinion, seem like the most likely inspiration for Dracula. That's not to say that Stoker wasn't inspired by other things, but given the book he borrowed about Wallachia and similarities between Dracula and Vlad himself, I do think it's safe to say that they're one and the same. Now, other sources say that Dracula may not have been inspired by Vlad at all. He never visited Romania, so who's to say he wasn't inspired by vampires in general? Legends of vampires have been around for ages. In the 1800s in Greece, anyone with red hair was seen as a suspect, for example. It could be that the real inspiration for Dracula came from Ireland itself. Stoker was a sickly child, and it's likely that during that time he was bled as an attempt to cure his ailments. His mother, Charlotte, is also said to have told a young Bram about the famine years she lived through, describing him the skeletal people that walked around the countryside, describing them as the living dead. It's said that Stoker's manuscript was originally titled The Undead, too. Quote, Charlotte also told her son stories of a dreadful cholera epidemic that nearly wiped Sligo off the map in the 1830s. Some sufferers were buried alive in case they spread illness. And also, though it may not be a well-known fact, Dracula was not actually the first vampire novel, but actually apparently the second. Another Irish author, Sheridan Le Fanu, wrote a vampire novel called Carmilla in 1871, which preceded Stoker's work, in which he was bound to have read. It's also possible that the word Dracula comes from the Irish word that is pronounced Dracula, which means bad or tainted blood. It looks like it says Dreach Faula. It's spelled D-R-E-A-C-H hyphen F-H-O-U-L-A. It's apparently pronounced Dracula. Maybe it's like Dracflaula? I don't know. But anyway, it's supposed to mean bad or tainted blood. So could it be that Stoker wasn't inspired by Vlad at all? Even Stoker's son says so and has supposedly said that his father invented Dracula during a nightmarish dream after eating too much dressed crab. I mean, if that's the key to making a great novel, I don't like crab. I don't like a lot of seafood in general. I don't know. Crustaceans kind of gross me out. But apparently that's the way to do it. But seriously, the idea of Dracula being inspired by Vlad the Impaler is practically seen as fact, even though his son claims that's not true. I mean, like, have you seen Castlevania? He's Vlad Tepes of Wallachia in that video game and animated series, not Dracula of the too much dressed crab origin. Obviously, Stoker's son would know better than us, I would assume, or, you know, maybe he's hiding it for whatever reason. And it could be that Dracula and Vlad simply have a lot in common. Their sadism, legends of drinking blood, and the same nickname. Maybe Stoker's subconscious combined the elements of Wallachia books that he's read, his mother's terrifying stories, and his childhood. Either way, Dracula has evolved over the years. Hungarian actor Bela Lugosi represented him first, and then in 1968, Christopher Lee did. In one film, Lee didn't have any lines at all, he just hissed at the camera. Eventually, Dracula became more goth, and now, well, there's too many adaptations to count for. And I think that adds to the potential lore of how, like, 9/11 caused 50 Shades of Grey to be a thing, which, if you don't know about that, I'm gonna just give you a quick rundown on this unconnected, kind of weird series of events. Okay, right, so I don't really remember this. I'm just like fully, so I'm just going off the top of my head. I'm sure I'm gonna miss pieces. So 9/11 happened. When 9/11 happened, the guys of My Chemical Romance that became the band saw it happening off a boat or something that inspired them to make music, right? My Chemical Romance, Born, boom. Something happens that inspires from My Chemical Romance to create Twilight vampires, right? And so vampires also inspired by Dracula's novel. And then, so there's that tie-in about how this is really all Vlad's fault, in my opinion. And then from there, I think that 50 Shades of Grey was like an online smutty fan fiction of Twilight or something like that, that became an actual book, movie, and all of that. So anyway, the point is, Vlad the Impaler caused 50 Shades of Grey, and I'm sure I missed a lot of pieces in that, but that is what I'm going with. Now, I'm truly not sure that we'll ever actually know what inspired Dracula or which source Stoker drew from more. Personally, I do find it interesting regardless of where the truth lies. It shows us how nothing is truly 100% original in the creative sphere either, and how we're all inspired by something. It may be bits and pieces of various stories all joined together to create something new, but even Dracula wasn't this new revolutionary concept. It was the more fascinating parts of myth and history alike all joined together. But with all of that being said, that's where we're going to end today's episode of Dark Dives. I hope you learned something new here today, and if you did, make sure that you're liking, following, and subscribing to stay up to date with all the latest content. And Halloween is tomorrow, so early happy Halloween if you are accepting trick-or-treaters at your door. I hope you have amazing candy. I'm dressing up Casper as a taco this year, so he's got a little taco costume, so I'm sure he's going to be so happy to give out treats this year. But yeah, thank you so much for joining me. I really do appreciate it, and I'll see y'all in the next one. Bye!